storage of ETSI processor vessels. I believe it's behind tab one. Dr. Pierce is the chair of the committee. He's going to lead us through several documents and letters. Before that, Jim Odlin.
Yeah, I just want to put it on the record that I will recuse myself from this vote due to a conflict of interest.
Good. Thank you, Jim. Dr. Pierce.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've already noted the documents that I'm going to refer to, in particular, the status sheet in tab 5, I believe, that pertains to herring. That's where you'll find a motion that was made by the Pelagics Committee at our May 3rd meeting. That's the focus of our attention here this afternoon. In addition to that particular document, there is a package of comments, public comments, and correspondence received as of June 8 relating to this issue of herring ETSI processing observer coverage. This particular topic, specific to herring ETSI processing observers, was brought up at the Pelagic Committee meeting, which was devoted principally, if not solely, to whiting. And it's not my intent to discuss whiting issues here today, except to note that our meeting summary is also in the binder. That's number one, where you'll find all of the decisions in progress that the Pelagics Committee devoting its time to whiting made at our May 3rd meeting. Early yesterday, you heard a report from the Executive Committee regarding what we intend to do with the development of the whiting plan at this time. That is, development has ceased, and I'm not going to explain that. I'll turn to the Executive Committee I'll turn to the Chair of the Committee, Chair of the Council, to deal with that specific issue in case anyone would like to be reminded or not reminded, be given the specific reasons why that is indeed happening. So with that said, and there's one other document I should reference. It's not a committee document. It's not a staff document. It's a fact sheet that's been made available to us, just passed out. A fact sheet that has been provided by members of the Northwest Atlantic Small Pelagic Resource Oversight Group, and the contacts for this group are listed on page 4 of that particular document. My assumption is that it's just another attempt by representatives of the sea herring industry, some of the movers and shakers, to provide us with information that we'll find useful to help us continue to further our understanding of the herring fishery regarding the benefits of the commercial fishery, bycatch information, and specific research initiatives that are underway. Those are all listed by this particular group. So once again, it's not anything being offered up by the committee or by the council. It's for your information, an industry fact sheet. All right. Now, the issue of observer coverage of ETSI processors, and of course the ETSI processor that captured the attention of the committee, was the only one we have at this time off of New England. And that's the one that's now being used to pursue mackerel and herring. I believe mackerel and herring. And Jimmy Odland certainly knows that vessel quite well, which is why he's recused himself. This issue was raised specifically by David Gethel and generated quite a bit of discussion. And that motion is, let me read it now, a motion being offered up by the committee. It's that the council take action so that the National Marine Fisheries Service can require ETSI processors to take observers in the most expedient way possible, because there is no way to observe the catch on vessels that transfer cod ends to the processor, and because this is the most efficient way to observe a number of vessels. And further, that catcher boats be required to deliver the entire catch, the caught end, to the processor to the extent possible so that accurate observations can be made. Of course, this motion was made largely because of the concerns about what's out of sight is perhaps out of mind, and it relates to the longstanding concern about what might be caught by midwater trawlers and other fishing vessels pursuing sea herring. What's the bycatch of haddock? What's the bycatch of other species that might be caught by those catcher boats that would then directly offload their cod ends at sea to the at-sea processor? So this was the issue, and this is the motion. Now, I need to highlight an important piece of correspondence that we received. It's also in your binder. It's number 2. This is a letter from the regional administrator, Pat Kirkle, to Paul Howard regarding that motion made at the Pelagic Committee meeting, where Pat takes the time to indicate to us that apparently there was some misunderstanding regarding what the service can and cannot do regarding U.S. at sea processors. And let me quickly note what she said here. I'll put the words in your mouth, Pat, because they're on paper. It's easy for me to do. And she indicates that at the meeting, her staff was uncertain about this issue of whether U.S. at-sea processors are required to carry at-sea observers. And she noted the reason why there was some uncertainty. And then she said, subsequent to the meeting, this issue was researched by her staff working with Lori Steele. And then she says that she can confirm that consistent with the regulations that specify the at-sea sea sampling observer coverage, the USAP at-sea processing vessels are required to carry an observer if requested. And she says, while the final rule for Amendment 1 labels the U.S. at-sea permit, at-sea processor permit, as a dealer/processor permit, in parentheses, in order to be consistent with the mandatory reporting requirements for USAP activity, close parentheses, it is still a permit issued to a vessel for the purpose of fishing. Therefore, these vessels are subject to the requirements for observer coverage. And then, let's see, she concludes by saying, note that the requirement applicable to U.S. at-sea processing vessels requires observer deployment when requested. This is not a requirement for observers to be deployed on all USAP trips. Such a requirement or other requirements that were discussed by the committee would have to be initiated by the council and implemented through a regulatory action. So that's the letter we received from her, June 4th. Now, my take on this is that a portion of the motion made by the committee, therefore, is moot. We don't have to do a portion of this because Pat has already indicated that she indeed already does have the authority. That would mean, therefore, that the first part of this motion need not stand, and that the only part of this motion that really is viable and applicable today is, and I would I'll indicate for the benefit, okay, the fifth line down where it says way to observe the catch on vessels that transfer caught ends to the processor. Go down to where it says and further that catcher boats be required to. That's the fourth line from the bottom. Okay, so if you would, delete all of the words before the word further. Now let's go a little bit farther than that. Delete the word further that. So the motion really is the only motion that really would require some attention by us today would be catcher boats be required to deliver the entire catch caught into the processor to the extent possible so that accurate observations can be made. Again, the rest of the motion has already been dealt with by Pat clarifying that indeed she already has the authority to do that which the committee wants to have done. So no counsel is required. Now, all right. That is the motion that really is before you today. And the question then becomes, as part of our debate on this motion, if the council feels it is important for this to occur, what would be the necessary steps for us to do it? Well, initiate a framework action here today to do this. That's one possible option, of course. However, I would suggest, especially after my talking to the chair of the council and others, that that might not necessarily be what we would want to do due to other pressing issues and priorities that we have before us now. Consequently, another option would be for us to deal with this motion at our November council meeting when herring issues will come up again, and potentially we will be taking action on herring. And, of course, that's when we'll be setting priorities for the upcoming year regarding what the council will be doing during the upcoming year. All right. With all that said, let's see. Let me just highlight one other thing, and because I don't think I did. The at-sea processing observer coverage, the public comments and additional correspondence received, you'll note, I'm sure, you already have noted that they're all pretty much carbon copies of each other. And there's a good reason for that, because the interests of at-sea processing, bycatch that might be caught by catcher vessels offloading their caught ends to the at-sea processors, yeah, that's a real issue for a lot of people. We know that's the case. And as a consequence of it being a real issue and concern, it generated a lot of interest. I'm sure an action alert went out by those organizations concerned about this possibility, possible discarding. And that action alert stimulated a great deal of concern. And that concern is reflected in these emails that we have received and some correspondence as well. Other items or other issues are raised as well by individuals who sent out these letters regarding midwater trawling, but that's not for today. For today, it's the motion that is up on the screen. So with all that said, Mr. Chairman, I would turn to you and ask you for some advice as to how you feel the council should now proceed regarding this portion of the motion made by the committee that is relevant for today's discussion.
Well, in conferring with other members of the executive committee and also reading the letter from the National Marine Fisheries Service, it appears that if this motion and steps to implement this motion were the desire of the council, that it would, in fact, require some sort of regulatory action in the form of a framework or an amendment at this time. And the council is free to initiate a framework if it feels strongly about it. However, over the past three or four meetings, we've had other opportunities to move things above the line, if you will, and reprioritize. And we've chosen not to do that for very good reasons. Part of those reasons have to do with the excessive workload and lack of resources to address these issues. Not to mention the fact that we've had extensive debate on herring at large this year numerous times. So my recommendation is that this issue become part of the debate in November when we set our annual priorities for the year 2008. However, that's my recommendation. It doesn't mean that the council or a council member can't make a motion. Also turn to the service to see if there's anything else they'd like to add beyond the letter that's in the record.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion, John, and I would support that. I would also remind the council that at least with respect to the observer coverage issue, we're also taking some action in the SBRM that will allow the council, through a framework action, to potentially require observer coverage to be paid for by the industry through the same process that we use in the scallop fishery. So assuming the SBRM is approved tomorrow and is implemented, that's another option that will be available in the future.
Staff have anything they'd wish to add? No. Other than that, you won a bodybuilding championship. Congratulations, Lori. This isn't to say that, you know, if that's the will of the council not to initiate an action, that's the will of the council at this time. It's not to say that the council isn't concerned or otherwise curious about what is happening with the USAP situation and the herring fishery at large. It's constantly an issue that is brought to our attention, that we address, and every year in November when we identify our priorities, it's certainly one that's in contention for attention. So I know there's people in the audience that have come to talk about this, so I'm going to open it up to the audience if there isn't any comment from the council. Dave Gable.
Yeah, I believe Amy Van Atten's here from the Observer Program, and maybe she could brief us on what their, you know, what their intended coverage is before the audience speaks, so they got some idea of what is going to happen based on the letter that's here.
I think that's a good idea, Dave. Amy, are you in a position to talk about Observer coverage?
John, I think she's looking at me to ask if it's okay.
Nancy, is it okay if Amy comes to the table?
Yes, Amy, it is fine.
Thank you.
All right, Amy Van Atten with the Observer Program. We do have 12 days scheduled on our C-Day schedule per month to put towards coverage on the processing vessel if they go fishing. The only things that we need to iron out, I don't know if we can just do it with our staff, but would be something like requiring a 72-hour call-in requirement so we know when the vessels are actually going fishing. And to clarify that it is mandatory observer requirements, it would include the health and safety regs, the safety decal requirement, and it's applicable to both the processor vessels and the catcher boats. I guess we would need some clarification on what the reasons are for the coverage, if we should be concentrating on small fish, large fish, marine mammals. That would we would have to adjust our sampling priorities accordingly. It would help if we could require the crew to notify us of when there were takes that were observed in the net by the crew, and I don't think that's clear in the regulations right now. We would also want to specify in future regulations what the observer workload should be, and to require a sampling station or flow scale on the vessel.
Amy, would you be able to provide that list to the council?
Sure.
Those are your recommendations from the observer shop, right?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Lori?
Relative to that list, I just wanted to clarify, those are all things that the sea sampling branch would be looking for in terms of regulatory changes if an action is taken on this issue. Are these things that the council has to do through an action in order to make them happen?
I wouldn't know that. It's
like the requirement for a 72-hour call-in, that doesn't exist now, and in order for it to exist, there'd have to be a council action for that to happen. And the crew requirement to notify of marine mammal takes, these are all things that you guys would look for if we were to do an action to clarify observer coverage on the ATSI processor. These are all things that are not in existence right now in the regulations.
Right. The regulations just are not quite specific enough for us to require that kind of assistance from the vessel.
Okay. So a council action would be required in order to implement any of those kinds of clarifications.
So it would be helpful if you could provide us with that list. I mean, it's on the audio record, but if you could provide the council. Dr. Pierce?
Well, the catcher boats have a notice, advance notice of when they're going to land, correct? So why wouldn't the catcher boats be in a position to indicate when they're going to be offloading to an ANSI processor so that the necessary observer coverage could be provided? And this is not, I suspect, going to be a problem for any ATSI processor. To this point, as far as I know, they've been extremely cooperative because they know that it's in their best interest to identify what's being caught by the catcher vessels and transfer it to the ATSI processor. So you would know when the fishermen were going to offload their fish to the ATSI processor. Wouldn't that then provide the service with the ability to get a sampler on board the ATSI processor to do some of that sampling? That's my question. Plus, you said 12 days per month. It's unclear to me when you said 12 days per month. Does that mean 12 days on the ATSI processor or 12 days on the fishing vessels themselves?
That would be up to us to decide once we know what the sampling priorities would have to be. It could be used for either one or a combination of. And 12 days a month, so we're just kind of keeping those on hold. They're not fishing right now and haven't been, so we have kind of a reserve. So if they were to go and we have 24 days, we would like to put an observer on the processor and a portion of the catcher vessels.
Okay, that would certainly be good. But again, my question is, we already have the 72-hour notification for the fishermen, correct? Therefore, wouldn't that enable you to know when they were going to go fishing so that they would be able, the observers would be able to, could deploy the observers?
Not for the processor.
Right, but they're going to be offloading their fish to the processor. Therefore, it's a unit.
But we have to know, the processor might go out for 20 days, and we have to know a couple days ahead of time when they're actually planning on sailing before they go out to sea.
Gene Martin. I think the processor boat falls under the same requirements as the, you know, as any herring permitted vessel. So it would also be required to give the required notice that's in the regulations or as specified in a letter by the regional administrator. I think there's built-in flexibility already and requirements that the processor boat's not going to be considered any different than the catcher boats for purposes of an observer.
Well, I'm not sure.
I don't know about the landing, the offloading at sea by the catcher boat to the processor boat. I don't know if there was anything mentioned that is needed to facilitate that part of the activity.
Currently, there's a requirement for a catcher vessel to notify 6 hours prior to offloading, right?
Offloading at sea?
No, not at sea, just offloading. Does it extend to an at sea processor or not? So, based on General Counsel's interpretation, the 72-hour requirement exists for an at sea processor prior to going on a trip. And
if that's what it is for herring vessel, I think I should clarify.
Does that currently exist for herring vessels to notify 72 hours in advance, catcher vessels?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Okay. So that would apply to the processor, too.
Okay.
Actually, I'm not an expert on the regulations, but I think it only applies. The call-in requirement only applies to Category 1 vessels in a specific area. Do you know, Lori?
Lori?
Well, there is no more Category 1, Category 2. I believe that it applies to all limited access herring vessels. It may just be for the – I'm not sure. I'm not sure how the regulations got modified through the herring amendment for that.
Somebody here must have the regs, right? So if you do, please try to look that up. Phil?
I'm shooting here, but I'm pretty sure the way it read out was it's the regulated mesh area. So, George, is there any place where there's regulated mesh is where you have to call for the observer.
Okay. You mentioned, Amy, that currently there's 12 days allocated for observation?
That's correct, per month.
And that 12 days can be allocated either all to an at sea processor or all to catcher or some mix?
Yeah, it's in a category that we call discovery days. And so those days, we usually carry them over from month to month if they're unused. We don't necessarily like to carry them over from quarter to quarter just because we're with the unpredictability of the budgets. But we would use it in a combination of processor vessels or catcher boats.
Okay.
There are additional herring days on the schedule, about 150 days that we'll be trying to target, and those would just be for the other purse seine, single midwater trawl, and paired trawl.
Okay. Lori?
Yes, I'm not sure what the plan is for the motion that's on the table, but I would just make a suggestion that the council consider as sending a letter to NIMS asking for some formal clarification of all of the regulations for observer coverage on at-sea processing and harvesting vessels for the herring fishery since the implementation of Amendment 1. I think it would be helpful to get an official interpretation of what the regulations are and who they apply to.
Took the words out of my mind, but anyone else in the council before I go to the audience? Okay. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Does anyone on the council wish to initiate an action to address the motion on the board at this time? So, anyone wish to recommend that we draft a letter to the National Marine Fisheries Service dealing with asking for clarification on how the regs since Amendment 1 have been implemented in terms of catcher vessels and at-sea processor? Dr. Pierce. So moved. Is there a second? Seconded by... Well... Yeah, you're right. We've got to deal with that. Dr. Pierce.
Well, one way to do it, of course, I can't do it because I made the motion on behalf of the committee, but one could move to substitute or move to, move to postpone until the November meeting. Not table, but move to postpone until the November meeting. It's another option to pursue regarding the motion that was up on the screen, the one that I made on behalf of the committee. If you want to get rid of it in a parliamentary fashion.
Somebody want to make that motion? Phil Rule, seconded by Dave Cathel. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 opposed. Okay, the motion carries 14 in favor, 0 against, and 1 abstention. Okay. Back on to the other issue of crafting a letter to the service. Laura, can you restate? You did it concisely. Can you restate that?
That the council send a letter to NIMS requesting clarification of regulations pertaining to observer coverage on harvesting and at sea processing vessels. Harvesting and at sea processing vessels. Following the implementation of Amendment 1. Or something like that.
Seconded by April. Discussion, Gene?
I just wanted to say that there is a general provision in the at-sea observer coverage of the regs that allows the specifications for notifying the regional science and research director about trips before commencing any fishing trips, so that we can specify it in a letter to vessels selected to take observers. So there's a lot of flexibility built in there as to the procedure for notifying the agency about the commencement of trips.
Discussion on the motion. Anyone in the audience? Yes, sir.
Steve Weiner from the Choir Coalition. You know, if what I heard earlier was that Pat Kirkland sent a letter saying that, in essence, this ATSI processor was going to be treated as a fishing vessel, then there is there really a need for that motion? I mean, it sounded to me like it, I mean, it either is or it isn't. I mean, Pat, am I right on that?
I think there's some confusion over what the requirements are. If there's a 72-hour requirement, what about the six-hour prior to offloading issue that applies to catcher vessels prior to coming into a land-based processor? Do those types of requirements extend to an ATSI processor operation?
Well, that's my question. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they be the same? I mean, Pat, I think my question is to Pat.
Well, I think since we did make the determination that they're a harvester vessel, they should be the same. I thought actually the confusion was more when we went from amendment from what we had to Amendment 1, how the observer requirements carried over there. And so I think it's worth just clarifying.
Okay. I mean, just from the Choir Coalition perspective, the sooner the better that this issue can be addressed so that it can happen. Before the year's out, and assuming that boat sails, and the sooner the better that Herring can become before this council, it would be best. And hopefully in November you'll put us on the priority list for 08. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Peter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Peter Baker from the Herring Alliance. I just wanted some clarification, hopefully, from Gene. Amy Van Atten at the May 3rd Pelagics Committee meeting said that she had a sailing date from the American Freedom, and then it left before that sailing date, so she wasn't able to put an observer on the boat. And from what I heard you say, that's not acceptable. Is that correct?
I can't speak to that fact situation. I'm not going to. The Herring processor boat is like any other Herring boat with a permit and is subject to the same observer requirements as any other vessel would. So if a vessel is requested to take an observer, it has to do so unless it's been waived.
Excellent. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. Any further discussion on the motion on the board? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fourteen opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries 14-0, one abstention. Dave, anything else? Thank you, Lori. Thank you, David. Okay, we're back on scallops. Just like
yeah,
that.
Mr. Chairman, before the, John.